All right, episode 494 with Anthony Anderson is brought to you by the Relax Far Infrared Sauna. I want to let you guys know, if you're listening in December of 2016, it is still on sale, and I would highly recommend buying one very, very soon, because it's going to be going off sale at some point very, very soon, and the price is going to be increasing. So if you buy one before it goes out off sale, you'll be saving $250. So I want to let you guys know about that. And the sauna is amazing sauna because it's portable. You can break it down and move it from room to room. It's a low EMF. It uses far infrared technology, and it heats up in literally probably about 30 seconds. It heats up right away, so you don't have to preheat it, and it helps to detoxify toxins and heavy metals from the fat cells, helps to increase circulation, helps to improve detoxification from your lymphatic system. It's an incredible machine, and I use it every single day. It's the best tool that we have for that. We're also brought to you by Rapid Release Technology Pro 2. This is the newest tool that we have and been using around here. It's an incredible tool that uses high vibrational frequency and vibration to break up scar tissue, to release trigger points in the body. It is the only machine that helped me get over my debilitating lower back spinal injury. It is incredible. I use it in a ton of different ways, like after workout to break down lactic acid in the muscles. I use it to relieve headaches, relieve pinched nerves in my back, to get rid of lower back pain. I use it to dissolve calcifications in my joints. I use it on my knees, on all my internal organs. I use it to stimulate the muscles in my neck and to calm my sore muscles. It is an incredible way to just be healthier. And I love it. Absolutely love this machine. It's so great. So if you're interested in the Rapid Release Technology Pro 2 or the Relax Far Infrared Sauna, just go to extremehealthradio.com/494, and they're both available in our store as well. Mr. Anthony Anderson.
Hello, Justin. How are you?
Doing awesome, man. Great to have you back.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, man. I fly to Hawaii tomorrow morning. So I'm going to be in Honolulu for about 5 days and then the Big Island. So it just worked out perfectly. I had a car rental and came right down from LA.
So what time do you leave tomorrow morning?
It's a 9 a.m. flight. So I'll try and get to LAX by 7:30. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Straight to the Big Island.
Honolulu first. Oh, yeah, it really works out nice. I mean, I have some friends that live in Manoa, which is a suburb of Honolulu. They need some help planting fruit trees in their yard. They just got a house. So I'm going to stay there for a few days over Christmas.
Oh, nice.
And then at that point, I'll fly to Big Island on the 26th or 27th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so we'll do New Year's there. One very special thing about the Big Island is that in Hilo, Hawaii, for some reason, the Big Island has very lax firework laws.
Oh, really?
Somehow. Yeah, or I don't know, where you'll be surrounded in a residential neighborhood with monster fireworks, that all the neighbors have big-time fireworks. So for the first time in my life, I'm surrounded by them, not like one central performance.
Yeah, like not normal. like a show, but
360.
Like
360. And just, you know, up in any random neighborhood in Hilo, Hawaii. So
wow.
We're going to make it a point, maybe do some house parties, but then around 11 o'clock, drive into town and then just kind of do some stuff there. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're staying with friends for Christmas and New Year's?
Yep.
Nice.
And then meeting some friends also in Honolulu. There's a planting project at a school in Waimanalo that I'm trying to connect with. So a friend, her kids go to school there. So then we'll be seeing what's up with that. It's an easy flight back and forth.
Okay.
So if I can get good school projects happening, community stuff, I'll easily fly back to Oahu and do some cool projects there.
So you're staying on the Big Island and you're going to kind of do other things on other islands. So you'll be living on the Big Island as well.
Yeah.
That'll be your final sort of destination.
I would say, you know, I'm going to be bouncing around a little bit this year, but I really want to put down roots on the Big Island. For 3 years, I've been going back and forth, you know, for maybe a 4-month stint or 3-month stint. But this time I really like to, you know, I'd like to go to Southeast Asia in April, maybe March or April. But besides that, we have the Grow Paradise Retreat in mid-January.
Okay.
That's only a week. So at that point, I'm going to be going up to a place called the Kohala Sanctuary. I was invited by the main caretaker there to help expand, work on the gardens. It's in Hawi, Hawaii, H-A-W-I, and it's called the Kohala Sanctuary. It was designed by a permaculture designer named Douglas Bullock. Wow. I believe it was Douglas. It's one of the Bullock brothers, but I think it's Douglas. They're the famous guys from Orcas Island, Washington. Oh, wow. And they have a really established food forest up there, but he helped plant that thing out, I believe, in 1996.
Oh, wow.
So 21-year-old Hawaiian food forest. There's a lot of cool places on the Big Island, but if you can find one that's been planted, you know, 20 years old, 15, even more, that's really where you see the mature systems. A lot of times people like us, we're getting into it, but we're only in our 5th year or so the trees are there, but it's not full on, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see this place, and it's about an hour north of Kona and maybe an hour and a half from Hilo, so it's still pretty close to things.
That's awesome.
Hawi, Hawaii. Check it out.
Have you ever been over to David Wolf's, what does he call that?
That's
Noni
called
Land?
Noni Land. Yeah. You know, I have not.
He talks a lot about it.
Yeah, that's in Kauai. Yeah. And my good friend Candace Richardson, she was helping develop that. She was involved
really?
In the Yoga Girl Hawaii is her thing on Instagram. She's now at another farm, her own place, I think somewhere in Kailua or Kilauea, Kauai. Mm-hmm. But really, she's awesome. So I was really good friends with Nick Good, who was spending some time over on the Big Island at a friend Jerry's place. That's where I did the first two retreats.
Oh, okay.
And he said, as good as Noni Land is, it doesn't have that wild feeling of the Big Island, you know, because I don't know if it's just that it's a little more developed on Kauai in that neighborhood. He said it was kind of like a suburban neighborhood with farms, but you're driving down the Red Road on the Big Island and you're seeing coconut sprouts everywhere, where on the, in Kauai, you're not going to really see those because there's way more people for the amount of land. And he's really felt like it was the roots vibe on the Big Island still.
Wow.
So I think he's in Bali right now, but I always wanted to see Noni Land, but once I was on the Big Island, I was like, this is kind of like Noni Land already.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they offer Airbnb situation there or what, but maybe now that I'm there, yeah.
What's the name of your place going to be? You got to give it some cool name like Noni Land.
I know.
You know? Like David Avocado Wolf.
Yeah.
So you got to have like Noni Land. You got
to
have...
To call it like
Real
Paradise Farm might be a little too generic, you know, but that's something. We'll come up with something.
Noni Land just sounds like fairyland or some fairy dust, but that's awesome. So are you going to be moving there? Are you permanently setting roots and that's going to be your next location for the foreseeable future?
I really think so. I mean, I'm besides the Southeast Asia trip and maybe some stuff in Minnesota, I think that really is the place to start putting down the roots, you know, getting the land established and then also starting to plan a family. You know, I really like the idea of doing it on the Big Island of Hawaii. So I think now is the time. I turned 35 last June. So it's about time to really start putting it down. You know, since, 2010, I've been kind of traveling around. I was living in New York for about 8 years in the early 2000s. And then 2010, I moved away. So it's been about 6 years now that I've been 1 year here, 1 year there. And as good as it is, I really do feel a little bit airy with things.
Mm-hmm.
Like it sucks to set up a garden and then you leave, you know?
Yeah.
And then you might see it get a little dilapidated. So I want to really stick into a place and, you know, get all the durian seedlings going and the white sapote seedlings and start working on some projects like that. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm jealous about with Hawaii is Noni, man.
Yeah.
I've never really tried it, but
it's a weed tree.
It's like it's everywhere there and people just walk over it like it's nothing.
Yep.
And it's probably one of the most powerful. It's got to be I don't know how you classify these things, but Noni's got to be in the top 10, right?
Oh, I would say
medicinal plants, right?
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that it can grow on that lava rock
with
no human help. I don't know if there's selected cultivars now, but the ones that grow on the Big Island, they just grow along the coastal roads and they're everywhere, you know, and you just pick them up. You put them in a glass jar and then wait for the water to slowly rise.
So all you do is just put them in a jar with no water?
Yep, with no water.
And just let it sit?
Yeah, and it'll just start coming up. I always wash the fruits.
They just ooze, don't they?
And yeah, and then they come. So when you take them out, they're just soft to the touch. They kind of squeeze. And you could take some bites out of that, but you want to put them in the jar when they're still firm. Kind of yellow, white, but firm. And at that point, it almost tastes like apple cider vinegar or kombucha once the water starts coming up.
So what do you do? Take the Noni fruits out of the jar and then drink the liquid?
Yep, just strain off the liquid, drink it, you know. And then at that point, I'll blend it with ginger, turmeric, aloe vera, and maybe orange juice get like this bright orange elixir.
Yeah.
Drink a quart of that every day. And it's just the Noni is off the charts. It's all over the place.
So how much, let's say you have 16 ounces of Noni liquid, how much orange juice would you add to that? Like, what would be the ratio?
I mean, that would be a monster dose of noni, you know, if 16 ounces. Yeah, I would say most people are probably going to want to drink 2 ounces a day or 4 ounces a day.
But, no, but so do you make like a big batch of it and then take a little bit each day?
Just a daily batch, you know. So usually it's, I'll probably take a cup of noni juice, so 8 ounces.
Okay.
I think that's 8 ounces, right?
Yeah.
That's a cup. And then big chunk of ginger, one aloe leaf, one of those big.
A whole one?
Yeah, I mean, because it liquefies everything. Maybe a... another half cup of OJ and then some chunks of the turmeric and everything, and so even some honey.
With the OJ in there, can you taste the noni flavor?
It's still there, but it's more like a kombucha. You know, it's mild. You get that kind of fermented apple cider vinegar taste, but it's not like potent. And it doesn't, it's not overpowering like the smell of the fresh fruit. It's got more of the, it's transmutated into something else.
Wow.
It's like a little bit more fermented and sweet instead of just that pungent blue cheese or odor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong. So how long would you let it sit in the jar?
To let it ooze. You get that first release after about 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty fast. But then some people like to just let it sit and they'll just keep pouring the liquid off and just keep adding until the fruits start to get black.
Oh, wow.
Almost like a purplish black. And then they let them sit out in the sun or anything. I mean, it seems like the sky's the limit. I don't want to put anything out there, but I've seen people go for a month or 2 months, just let it sit. And
wow.
They keep, you know, you might see some fuzzy white stuff on the top, you know, and they'll just take that piece out.
Okay.
You know, and anything under the liquid, it must be so acidic that stuff can't.
I wonder if you put it in liquid and let it sink like you do. You know how you ferment cabbage and everything's below the water? I wonder if that would...
It would, as long as it's covered.
Yeah, it'd be good.
I don't know if they would float in open water, but usually they're just packed in there, mm-hmm. and the water just rises. So, yeah, wow. That's a big one out there. But even the people that live out there, they're not doing it that much.
I mean, you
got to find some wacky raw food folks that are really into it. Even the locals, you know, they'll be like, oh, I don't eat that stuff, you know.
Yeah, no one eats it.
You'll
find
like a random... You know, granola style, just taking chomps out of it, big bites, and then other ones like you know, you'll see a lot of it for sale in the shops, but it's usually pasteurized.
Okay,
even in the shops. So, but the easiest and freshest way is just to make it at home.
So, what's the deal with the noni here? Can you get it? I know you can get it here, but it's all fermented and pasteurized, right?
As far as the liquid.
Well, yeah, if you can get noni liquid, I know Genesis Today has a noni product. Okay. I've never tried it, but they claim to be unpasteurized.
Okay.
But I was under the impression that anything on a shelf had to be pasteurized. It was a liquid, but maybe I don't know. But
I know you can get on a shelf like that. Maybe it's like apple cider vinegar where it's so acidic that it's already turned, you know, so it's already gone bad.
Yeah.
But
gosh, that's so cool. So what other fruits are you excited? I know you're a big persimmon fan, right?
Yeah, persimmons. You know, I would love to see, this is a goal of mine, is to try and bring stuff from the mainland to Hawaii, you know, obviously to do it legally, but to bring, you know, white sapote and certain kinds of mulberries, but stuff that's already on there. And persimmons are another one where you're only going to see persimmons maybe on Maui. I think maybe in Volcano, some people might grow them, but you're not going to see all the cool varieties like you do in California.
Yeah.
So if you could mail branches and then just attach them on to the ones that are already over there, that would be a really easy way to spread some genetics. Because you just can't take a persimmon seed and mail it to Hawaii, because you'll get this random, it's like a random child. You don't know if it's going to be like its mother or father.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it'll be like an apple. You know, like 1 in 1,000 might be, that's a random number I'm throwing out, but that might be really palatable. All the other ones might be small and kind of hard.
I see. Like, so you want to make sure that you can plant the whole leaf or whatever, or plant all the seeds that you can.
Yeah.
So you have the biggest chance of success.
Right. So that's what plant breeders will do. They'll plant out 1,000 mango seeds. And then, you know, it takes 5 years or something before they're checking the cold tolerance and the flavor of the fruit.
Oh.
And then they mark that one, call it X77 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a new one, like a Honeycrisp. So you'll see a lot of them developed by universities where they've got the money and manpower to get those numbers out and select the right one. And
interesting.
So it's a big numbers game. And with persimmons, it's the same way. You know, they grow out tons of them, and then they pick the ones like the Hachia. Uh-huh. And then that one's so nice, so then they just take branches of it.
And then they start,
Yeah.
Dude, you know, you and I caught some flack for our last show together. Do you know
about
that?
Mm-hmm.
someone was upset that we were talking about sending. I shared that story of how my mom will always send over leaves from New Zealand to here.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about, you know, you guys don't realize that when you introduce new plant life into areas that have been sort of quarantined or whatever, you know what I mean, that shouldn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really upset about that. Talked about it like that.
There's a big knee-jerk reaction because we've been taught to think that, you know, human involvement is a really bad thing. And usually when those sorts of species will take over, there's been a gap made by humanity. You know, a lot of these species really wouldn't be able to take a foothold unless humans had already disturbed the land.
Mm-hmm.
Like Russian olive is another one or even, let's say Japanese knotweed. If there weren't clearings made by humans, it needs a lot of light, you know? So in a intact, undisturbed forest, those plants could never take hold, you know, because the shade is really blocking out the potential. So I like people to think of it not as natives, not a matter of where, but when. When was it native? The flow happens throughout history. So people like to think of it as a location thing, as mm-hmm. like, oh, this is native to here. But I really would ask people to think of it also in time frames.
Okay.
Like this one was native from 1600 to 2000 and this, and then another one came in, and sometimes humans do it, sometimes the wind will do it.
Uh-huh.
And it just, nature has this way of always filling up the gaps.
Right.
So if people are cutting a bunch of oak trees or chestnut trees, and then there's a stand of white pines nearby that are native, then maybe 20 years later, you see all these baby white pines that start to grow in that area.
Okay, you're right.
So, you know, especially if they're plants that are producing food, I just can't go with it. Like someone was like, oh, there's hardy kiwis that are taking over this part of New England, you know, but hardy kiwis put out an amazing fruit that supports wildlife. And it's a vine that would be, you know, it takes up space that something else would obviously take up anyways.
Right, right.
So if it's going to be edible, why not, you know?
It kind of goes into that whole idea of like chaos gardening, right?
Yeah.
Where you allow nature to take its course.
Yes.
And you allow, and I think that's really the way that our bodies should work and our health and everything, right? You want to let the strongest survive.
Yeah. Like what makes it through the gamut of everything.
Yeah.
There's a book called, I believe it's Invasion Biology, and it really addresses all the ideas of exotics and invasive species. And it really is an idea that's pushed by the chemical companies, because if you get into the mindset of weeds and these plants aren't supposed to be here, you're a really likely candidate for becoming a consumer of weed killer, buying weed killers, poisons, you know, to spray these invasives.
I see.
So a lot of it is pushed by companies like Monsanto and other people that sell, let's say, I don't want to say pesticides, but even herbicides.
Okay.
Yeah, they're selling herbicides because it's a big business. If you can convince people that this plant should not be here.
Uh-huh.
So now you're going to sell this remedy, which is usually a chemical poison. I like to use vinegar, you know, vinegar and salt water. Give your plants that you don't like in that area a shot of that. The chances of it surviving a vinegar salt shot is so low. And it's
you spray the roots or the...
Spray the roots, yeah.
Roots, yeah.
But, I mean,
or the ground.
Anything that it touches on the leaves will wilt up too. But it's a very inexpensive remedy. And people are going to the store and buying, you know, got Roundup and everything. That stuff's not cheap. And you can just use a cheap bottle of vinegar and add a ton of salt to it.
How much salt and vinegar?
I would make
it
almost like a sole, you know, pour as much in as you can. The saltier, the better, and just give it a hit. And those roots have no chance of surviving.
Yeah. Too much salt is just going to kill. It's going to dry them out and kill them.
Even salt water. When I was living in Hawaii, this one spot where Nick Good was at for a little bit, he had a float tank. And it was used. He had used Himalayan pink salt in the float tank.
Oh, no way.
It had been sitting there for probably 4 years unused. And there was like a gecko pickled sitting inside the water.
No
way. So nobody
way.
Was using it. Yeah, the pump was broken and everything. But it was so salty that nothing could even survive. So I was just taking that and putting it in the spray gun and just spraying stuff, you know, like along the pathways that were all weedy, whatever. And it would just knock it right out.
Wow.
You know? So you don't need the expensive herbicides. So, and that's, I believe, those are the companies that are pushing the idea of invasives.
Yeah.
So
it's like a philosophy behind It's really tricky though when you think about it. I mean, it's really sort of ingenious because you get this philosophy that's sort of put out there as like education.
Oh, very much so.
You know, and then you kind of just let that settle within the consciousness of people, and they have a mindset now that they have plants in their area that they need to get rid of.
Yes.
And then they think, oh, wow, well, I guess I just buy, you know, Roundup to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's really, really,
yeah,
and really
it goes
tricky.
Through, it goes through the filter of the universities because, look, I mean, obviously they're getting their money from these big companies. Mm-hmm. And so there's a motivation there to obviously invite that into the curriculum. And so, yeah, it's pretty – the mindset is what is invasive, you know, mm-hmm. like that we have to kill these things. And, you know, you'll see like beautiful wild passion flowers growing all over the place. And a lot of people would say like, oh, no, they're not native here. Or the California pepper tree, which is actually from, I believe, the Andes up in, you know, Peru. And it's a beautiful, you know – naturalized tree now. So mm-hmm. it's really weird. I mean, there are some bad stories of plants overtaking areas, but that's always where a gap has been made by humans.
Right.
So I just invite people that might disagree with what I'm saying to check out some books that explain this a little bit better. And mm-hmm. the best one is I found Invasion Biology.
Invasion Biology.
Invasion Biology. I don't think it's theology. It's biology. Invasion Biology. But it's from a man, I think, named Theodore something. Okay. So I'll pull it up on – maybe we can look for it later. But
yeah,
I highly recommend that one. And, of course, Hawaii is like that where, you know, Hawaii, New Zealand, Australia, they're islands. So they're very scared about imports. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you don't want to –
a delicate ecosystem.
Yeah, you know, the koki frogs, the fire ants.
Yeah.
Those are all relative newcomers to the island. Mm-hmm. And people have become accustomed to the koki frogs, you know, on the east side. And actually, no, on the west side now, too. You'll find them in the more cooler northern zones, or up the hill, I mean. But as far as the fire ants, like, they're really bad. You know, you really have – they're these small – tropical ones, and they move really slow, and they climb up into the bananas.
Oh, really?
And get into cabins, and you have to be very aggressive with them, you know.
Wow.
So people use this one product called Andro, and it's supposed to sterilize the queen. And then there's some other stuff, or they'll do the vinegar salt water spray, you know, chili peppers, mm-hmm. and just try and hit the hives. And
wow.
But yeah, they're very slow, and they kind of get into stuff, and
it's pretty cool. So, yeah. Living closer to the land, isn't it? Like closer to land and getting in, sort of diving into that whole cycle of life with stuff. You know, we're so, we're so disconnected from that whole cycle, like birth, death, and everything else, food. And it's really cool when you can sort of put one foot in, and you can put your one foot in by growing some of your own food.
Yeah.
And the work that you're doing is cool because it's teaching people, like, get into that cycle. Get into that cycle where you're learning about where your food comes from and seasonal foods. And ultimately, really, it comes down to your health as well. So you get involved in making or growing the food, and then that helps your health, and you keep going on the cycle. But I think that the work that you're doing is really cool in that regard, because it's teaching people that, hey, our food shouldn't be coming from some factory somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I shared this on the show a little while ago. I'm half Australian, but I was born and raised here my whole life. And so one of Kate's, my wife's friends, has a husband that's Australian. Mm-hmm. And she gave him... she gave Kate a bag of cookies that was like, you know, Australian, called Tim Tams or something.
Okay.
It's like some chocolate wafer cookie. And I'm looking at the ingredients of this stuff, and it's like, it's a mile long.
Oh,
and it just starts, the first one is like sugar. You know, it's just like every ingredient known to man, genetically modified this, yellow dye 40.
Yeah.
All these crazy ingredients. And I'm thinking, people eat this stuff and they think it's food.
Yeah.
And it was made in a chemical factory somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, how disconnected are we?
Yeah, not even a factory, but like a chemical factory.
Yeah.
And then all formulated together. I know, it's a weird thing.
It's weird, isn't it?
I think, yeah, what happened with me, maybe in my early 20s, when I started seeing, you know, consumer culture for what it was, or I was seeing people getting sick, I was like, if I don't eat their food, I'm not going to get sick and have to take all their pharmaceuticals later on in life. So it's almost like you could just circumvent the whole thing. And then to take it on to extrapolate on that, you can just, you know, with the Grow Paradise idea and growing your own food, totally transcend the whole middleman, and you don't need this person who's going to make your food and then sell it to you. And then this food really, you know, it's grown with the profit motive. It's not grown with love.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're incorporating that into your body, into your cells. So then you're going to come into this world of pharmaceuticals, hospitals, and everything else. So Grow Paradise and the idea of food forests, paradise creation, is really, I believe, the panacea that can save humanity and planet Earth, where we could finally achieve a coexistence. And I, gosh, this was so crazy. There was an article with James Lovelock, who was the scientist that developed the Gaia hypothesis, okay, that the Earth is a self-regulating organism. Almost it's a conscious organism. Mm-hmm. He's an old British guy. There was an article on The Guardian not so long ago about his hopes or lack of hopes for global warming and what's going on. I've never seen a more defeatist, low attitude. Like, just so.
Really?
He was so like, nothing we do, we're so screwed.
We're
like,
done.
It's just, yeah. I don't even know. I've been trying to warn people about this.
I should just kill myself right now.
It was so defeatist. And they're even asking, like, what about trees? Like, planting trees? He's like, you're better off putting money into getting natives to protect the trees than to plant your own trees. You know, wow. I was like, what is going on? I was like, dude, food forests are real. Like, yeah. People are regenerating old fields, you know, bringing landscapes back, like feeding communities.
It's happening all the time.
Why? I mean, there's the project on the Lus Plateau. There's a documentary called Green Gold made by a filmmaker named John Liu, L-I-U, John Liu. And he has Jeff Lawton, the famous permaculture designer, on there. They go to Jordan. They go to China. All these places that are totally regenerating the landscape.
Really?
And they'd show the befores and afters. Why is The Guardian and James Lovelock promoting this lazy, defeatist idea? And it just makes me so angry that, I mean, these are supposed to be intelligent people, and they're giving zero hope. And I don't know if they really believe it, or if they just are trying to get people to sow their own fate, but it's not cool, because people are doing it, and people are really making it work. And I've seen it firsthand. I've seen it, you know, on the internet. I know it's real. I know people can save themselves.
Well, you see it all the time in your own work.
Absolutely.
I mean, you see it every day.
Absolutely. It's not hard, even in the cities, you know, like one family, it's like you can just totally transcend the whole problem, like of sickness, having enough money, all the things. It's a panacea, like even emotional well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just happier being around the plants. You're incorporating clean, energy, pure foods. And so all of a sudden, all the hurdles that are put in front of us are just like, poof, they're gone. And so when I see, you know, mainstream media obviously promoting these ideas of hopelessness.
You mean fake news like CNN?
Yeah, yeah. I've been tempted to stand outside with a big thing like fake news. You know, like, this is
all the corporate logos.
I just wonder, because most people, they know mainstream media has like a 6% trust rating.
Is that right? Is that what they're saying?
I believe. You know, it could be a little higher, but it's rock bottom low. So all of a sudden, when they come out with something that's supposed to be so important with this fake news strategy, then obviously they're trustworthy again, and we have to listen to them. You know,
right.
But a couple months ago, nobody trusted them anymore. You know, like they lied about weapons of mass destruction, everything. I mean, it goes back to the 50s, you know, even Gulf of Tonkin for Vietnam and everything. They're just riddled.
It's one lie
with
after
deception.
Another. Yeah.
So somehow now we're supposed to believe what they're saying since
Hillary
lost the election.
I think what this guy at The Guardian, what was his name that wrote this article?
I don't know the author of the article, but James Lovelock
I think that one of the things that I don't know if this is like a control thing. I never know if these things are controlled or if they're like supposed to come off this way, but anytime you can get something mainstream that leaves the listener with no hope or some sort of feeling of like a vibrational low.
Yes.
Like where someone feels powerless and they think, there's nothing I could do. There's 7 billion people on the planet. The Earth's going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
What can I do? I don't know if that's like a controlled thing where that was the intention of the person writing the article or the intention of the people behind the website.
Yeah.
But anytime you can get mainstream whatever it is for the people that consume that to feel that way, mm-hmm. I think that's, like I said, I don't know if that's intentional, but that's always the way it is, where
yeah.
you have the mainstream, or where, you know, you and other people like you are going around and there's so much hope, like there's so much we could do.
Yeah.
And so for people to have that vibrational, low, negative, dark, down feeling,
mm-hmm.
it sucks because there's solutions out there for everything.
Yeah.
You know?
I tell you, I felt that way when I got out of the movie Inconvenient Truth. Oh. And I really liked Al Gore at the time. I really did. Yeah. You know, and I was so excited to see us, but I went to see the movie. But when I walked out, the documentary, when I walked out, I felt really weird and hopeless.
Did you see it in a theater?
Saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wanted to see it right away, you know. I don't know when it came out, but I was still into him and what he was talking about.
When was that? That was early
2007, 2006.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was like early 2000s, but no.
I was in New York. Maybe I moved there in 2004.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe 2005.
Wow.
I don't know, but
you felt that way?
Yeah. I went to the, I think it was called the Sunshine Theater in the East Village.
Yeah.
And I walked out just totally weird. Like sales were deflated and talking about light bulbs and, you know, but never talking about the military's use of
right.
fossil fuels or any of the big companies. I mean,
yeah.
it was just kind of weird. And so then I came across an author named Derek Jensen. And he wrote a book called The Culture of Make-Believe or A Language Older Than Words.
Oh, wow.
And he wrote some essays about Al Gore's movie and just the feelings of hopelessness that it put out and how people with good hearts are now trying to take shorter showers or they're not taking hot showers anymore because they feel guilty. You know, so there's this whole guilt imposed by people that really actually give a damn. But when, you know, there's people, golf courses and military bases and, you know, huge things just wasting water, you know, car yeah. production facilities.
Oh, yeah. Golf courses are some of the worst.
Yeah. So you have every single individual that has a good heart, you know, feeling guilty for taking a hot shower.
Yeah.
And when that's not even part of the problem, you know,
wow.
so... I would love to see more responsible gray water. The gray
yeah.
water, for those out there that don't know, it's like a recycling of water that's not toilet water. So
uh-huh.
laundry, sink water, and then using that to feed the fruit trees. Gray water is a really cool thing.
Yeah.
But see more incorporation of that in Southern California. I mean, a lot of things with the drought and all that. Obviously, they're not getting as much rain here as they were in the past, but a lot of it has to do with improper usage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this project called the Malibu Food Forest that I've been working on up in Saddle Peak, we had to change the rain gutters where the original owner 20 years ago had the rain gutters going past the fence outside the property, just like dumping all that valuable rainwater from the roof off the land, just down into some gully.
Was that what you were on Instagram using that drill for?
Yeah.
That was that?
You mean the jackhammer?
Yeah, the jackhammer.
That was there. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was just around the other side of the property.
Okay.
So they had all this valuable rainwater up in, you know, Saddle Peak, northern part of Malibu, totally, you know, deprived of all that good rainwater. So we changed it and we're going to have it so everything gets seeped into the ground now. So it's just a matter of improper usage and harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is just a mindset. And it just, once you get into it, you're like, oh, wow, I'm liberated. Like there's so much abundance out there. There's so much fruit. There's so much rainwater mm-hmm. to harvest. You know, it's all about just having the capacity and yeah. So a lot of hope out there. There really is.
Yeah. And, what was that famous quote? There's some quote that says something like, growing your own garden or growing your own food is the most revolutionary act that you could
yeah.
do or be involved with or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's true because, you know, a lot of people think, oh, just growing your own food, what a big, you know, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's very profound what you're doing. If you're able to sustain yeah. yourself, I mean, you know, not everyone's going to be able to grow all their own food, but if everyone grew even 30% of their own food,
oh yeah,
I mean, that would represent, I don't know how many billions of dollars that would not be going to Kroger and all
yeah.
these corporations, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that 30% is not much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, look what it would do for GDP, you know? It would
yeah.
go down.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing. Like, there was some essay about this where whenever bad things happen in our society, GDP will go up.
Uh-huh.
You know,
right,
like
right,
this
right.
or that. And I'm not like against growth or, you know, a lot of people would target me as something like that, but you'll always see bad things cause spending to happen.
Right.
And if something like people growing their own food or adopting a barter system, it causes a lot less money to be involved in the system.
Right.
You know, so a lot of people at face value be like, oh, you know, it's costing jobs or this or that, but it's liberating people too. You know, so where is the ultimate goal? You know, what's the means to an end? Is it economic growth or is it liberating people from grocery bills and future pharmaceutical bills?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the real priority here for us?
Right.
And obviously it's been a little skewed in the past 50 years, but
what are your thoughts about people growing food native to certain areas? Or maybe, or how about this? What are your thoughts about when people buy, like, well, goji berries is not a good example. What's a good example of a food that is super, super healthy for you, like maybe a superfood that doesn't grow here that people will pay money for that's shipped over from like New Zealand or Thailand or...
Acai is a good one.
Acai from Brazil.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about people consuming food that's not local?
It's, I remember David Wolf brought up this subject and people would give him flack sometimes for cacao or something.
Well, yeah, because he's a big superfood guy.
Yeah, but he said, he compared it to coffee. He's like, cacao imports or something, superfood is like 1/10 of 1% of coffee imports.
Okay.
So it's almost like we're targeting the superfood people as hypocrites when there's already this massive importation of coffee and other
right.
products. You know? Obviously, we want to hone in on more local foods, stuff that's really grown hyper-local with where we have a relationship with those plants. But I would say to deny somebody these awesome nutrients from another country would be a little totalitarian. I would say, you know, go for it if you want to try maca or whatever else. You know, yeah, most commercial goji berries are coming from China or Mongolia.
Right, right.
So, yeah, you know, they're going to be... It's a world of, you know, global shipping. So I mean, we could take advantage of it, but I would say try and get, once I wasn't a vegan anymore, I stopped really buying a lot of those products.
Yeah.
Like I was just eating more grass fed animal products and stuff more from here. And I wasn't buying the superfoods as much.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of took me out of the superfood circle where I enjoyed them, but I wasn't focusing on buying a big bag of bee pollen or
right.
this or that, or, you know, it gets a little crazy sometimes.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't really chastise anybody for doing it. You know, as a whole, it's a drop in the bucket for real imports.
Yeah.
But the more local, the better, you know, and especially the stuff that you can grow on your own property.
Yeah.
Or with friends nearby, locally harvested stuff nearby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be the way to go too. Because, you know, anytime you purchase something that comes from overseas, you have to consider the fuel that's involved. And all of that stuff and the freshness factor.
Totally.
Which is why they dry all those fruits, you know, the goji yes. berries and stuff, right?
Yeah. I was involved with Tea Sources Europe in 2012, and they were a major importer in France. They would import stuff from Colombia and Mongolia. And stuff would have to sit for a while because it has to go through customs. And so you're looking at least a couple months before it even opens up to get it. And then they've had it at the factory before, you know, the people,
because they pick it,
wholesalers,
way ripe, right? It's,
yeah.
So you're getting it, not only is it not fresh, but it wasn't picked ripe. So
that could be. I mean, I remember seeing them do dried bananas and they were all really yellow and cutting them up nice, but it all depends. But still, they haven't, it's been months.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at goji berries, they're picking them in August or July, and they're not really coming out until February because they have to sort them and this and that and wait for the, you know, so it's almost like before Chinese New Year, they'll send them out.
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of the deadline. So, gosh, it's a long time.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the really fresh ones, you know, and a lot of times maybe you're finding goji berries for, oh, no, they're 40% off, but that's the 2014 harvest that
wow.
somebody had bagged up for a while, you know, and they got them at like $4 a pound. People do that with coffee. You can find an amazing price on coffee sometimes, but you don't know, those beans might have been sitting around for 5 years.
Yeah, that's not
so
good.
Yeah, there's a lot. Stuff's cheap for a reason.
Hey, what would be your ideal situation? Like if you could make your ideal living situation,
mm-hmm.
and what would be your dream setup?
Nice. I think it would be, I would have it on the Big Island.
Okay.
And then it would be, you know, it could be two acre farm based on fruit trees and chickens, laying chickens. I'd be into milking goats or cows, but I'd have to ease into that. But at least with the birds and then the fruit trees.
Okay.
And then from the birds have a food truck that sells egg sandwiches. or some sort of cool egg product instead of just selling dozens of eggs.
Okay.
I'd like to have it where, you know, we have even like ice cream from the land where we're making white sapote ice cream or different kinds of coconut ice creams. And then we also have these egg sandwiches.
Okay.
But we're selling it at retail with an added value instead of just selling them at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
To the next step of it and then have the thing and then have an Airbnb set up and then where people can come to that land and do retreats there and just come on a daily tour where we have them come for lunch and dinner and then bring them back to their hotel. You know, so it's kind of an ecotourism, working farm, different income streams.
So you would grow, you'd have all kinds of fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of like root vegetables would you have?
Since it's tropical, we would go with the purple sweet potatoes. That's really big on the island. You see a lot of ginger, galangal, turmeric.
Okay.
Taro is another one. They call it kalo in Hawaii. But another one, I mean, it's nice about taro and turmeric is that the animals don't eat it.
Oh, they don't?
Yeah, like the pigs aren't going to bother it.
Really?
Where maybe with sweet potatoes and some other things, you're going to, ginger is probably safe too, but things that are definitely protected. And I would play around with beets and carrots. I don't see them that much on the island. It's weird. Yeah. I know people that they say only cherry tomatoes will really grow outside.
Really?
You'll see some regular tomatoes for sale, but they're all in the greenhouse, I think to protect them from bugs.
Oh, wow.
Not for climate, but.
See, that's weird though, too, because if you have those being protected from bugs, I mean, you're kind of creating an artificial situation for them, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's not necessarily like strong food then.
Yeah, they wouldn't survive otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, that goes for a lot of stuff, you know. Even a lot of the fruit trees that we enjoy, they're developed in universities, so they might need a little more protection once you bring them out into the wild, you know, because they've been in this domesticated area protected by professors for years.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you're taking the grafts, the scions out into the wild, and now they got to fend for themselves.
Right.
So they probably need some neem oil and some other different, foliar sprays.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So how much, if you, in your dream setup, how much food would you grow that you would eat? Like, of all the food you eat, how much of it would you grow yourself?
I think I could almost get 100% because I would be hunting wild pigs.
Okay.
I plan on buying a crossbow as soon as I get out there.
Really?
And, yeah.
Look at you.
Definitely going for it.
Going for the hunting.
A little funny tidbit. The second retreat, we actually ate a roadkill wild boar.
Really?
We were driving to these thermal heating hot ponds. This is on the East Coast in Pune. You go up the Red Road a while, and you find the warm ponds, they're called. And so we left.
What's a pond? What do you mean?
It's a spring-fed
ocean. Pond.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But it's really clear water, and it's like a public swimming pool that used to be a fishing aquaculture setup
by
the Hawaiians, and it's been modified into a swimming pond, but you'll still see fish swimming through and there's eels in there at night, and but it's like a big public pool. So we would drive up there and actually I lost my train of thought. The roadkill. We go there at night because you can go there at night and it's all dark hanging out. We come back, right in front of the house is a dead female pig that got hit in the face by a car.
Ooh.
And we were just
lying on the side of the road.
Yeah, it was definitely fresh. I would have noticed it.
Wow. You know?
And I just bought a spear because I was like sitting in this little spot on that land and there were a lot of papayas that were getting knocked over by the wild pigs. So I was all about it. You know, like I would love for a lot of vegans to start gardening. And then once animals, I mean, there's always design to keep them away, but once your animals or the wild animals start destroying your plants,
that's a real issue in Hawaii.
The line is crossed. It's something happens where the vegan tendencies will start to melt away a little bit because it's like
damn it, I got to protect my
land.
Yeah,
I'm trying to grow my fruits and vegetables here, and this animal is like really, and there's like a tax to nature, you can say, but after a while, you have to come up with something. So either you hunt them or you fence them off, you know, as much as you can. So I've done both, but the meat's amazing. So
what'd you do? You see this boar, how big was it?
It was a smaller female, probably 35 pounds.
Oh, okay.
It's almost like a dog, you know?
Not very big.
So me and my friend Weston, we carried it in, and I'd field dressed some deer before, so I was comfortable with it, and we took a knife and zipped it open and cleaned everything out, and I took the skin off, and we washed it off, and we put it in a really big crock pot. including the head.
Well, you cut it all up into pieces?
Quartered it up, yeah.
Okay.
Skinned it, gutted it, quartered it.
So everything suctioned off. You took out the internal organs, separated those off, yep. And then the meat.
And threw it in a big stock pot, a crock pot. And
really?
So cooked it down for about 12 hours. And then after that, like the most amazing pulled pork was in the, and it was just, all I added was salt. And it was just such a good flavor. And we had that for a few days.
Were you worried about parasites?
I mean, it was cooked. I mean, it was really cooked. It was in boiling water for 12 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, some people might say, oh, the eggs are going to survive or,
yeah.
You know, but I don't know. And then a funny thing was that Weston is very sensitive to regular domesticated pork. He said he could eat that stuff and wouldn't have the same reactions.
Wow.
So it's a whole, and the animals are eating avocados and ripe nonis, you know, all sorts of fruits on the ground. So it's a different animal. You know?
Yeah. And typically what people don't realize is that, you know, the parasite issue is an issue, but it's an issue when you're eating animals that are already broken down and sick.
Yeah.
Right.
That too, so, you know, crowded conditions,
yeah.
You know,
so you're eating like a wild boar and it's like, you know, that thing's robust. It's vital.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, you know, I mean, boars and pigs do have more parasites, you know, but the fact that it's wild, mm-hmm. you know, is a good thing, you know,
yeah,
probably, I mean, helps you.
So, yeah, and it's like, I definitely wouldn't eat it raw,
yeah.
You know, and I'd
not like Ogynous, you wouldn't go for that?
No, I don't think so.
Raw pig.
I've seen people eat raw chicken, you know, but.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Trichinosis or however you say it. I wouldn't even want to mess with that, with the raw pig.
No.
You know, I think it's a good food if handled properly.
Uh-huh.
I know a friend, he's married to another friend and he can only eat three things. I think it's butternut squash, organic pasture raised pork. And God, it was one other thing. It's a coconut or something. And he's got a lot of food allergies. And for some reason it really works with the organic pasture raised pork. And so I was like, all right, well, you know, you never know what's good for people. But yeah, I found it to be really not affecting my health, but I can, when I go to the bathroom the next day, I can smell that I haven't eaten pork.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's something about it where you can tell there's a, it's obviously not table conversation, but you can smell that you've been eating pork.
So yeah. You're going to buy a spear or bow and arrow?
Crossbow.
And you're going to go into that whole life?
You can get a gun. Hawaii gun laws are a little strict where I don't know how it works, but you can't lend a gun out to a friend. Like if you're going to shoot a gun, you have to own it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's different than a lot of the states here. I think they fear locals having too much power.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's still that kind
of... The government would fear locals, people having too much power? Really?
There's still a real big chance of,
I'm shocked.
Secession or something like that. And
yeah.
It's only been, you know, there's still a much more undigested culture there, you know, that hasn't been totally assimilated into the United States. So I think that that's why the gun laws are more strict there. But, and I don't want to be loud either. I don't want to be blasting off guns.
Right.
Although it's probably the most humane way is to put them down with a gun. But a crossbow is extremely powerful and accurate.
Uh-huh.
I would like to do bow and arrow, you know, but I would feel more ethical and responsible with a crossbow.
It's a crossbow, yeah.
For sure.
And now, so what are the,
track them in. And,
is it possible to get the aim? Like, which one can you aim better with? A crossbow?
Crossbow.
Like, is that right?
Bullseyes.
Perfect.
All the time. Like, people have the scope, and some people, it's crazy. They hunt them with dogs, and they'll have dogs with collars, and then the dogs run into the jungle, and the guys follow them with a long sword, and that's all they have. And the dogs...
In Hawaii or other places?
In Hawaii, but probably other places too. And, you know, you'll have three dogs holding a leg and an ear, and they're just like holding the dog down, and the person will come in with a long sword and stab the pig.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's hardcore, but you'll hear them off in the distance, you know, once in a while, like, rah, 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 barking.
Really?
And
wow.
Pig hunters, yeah. Or you'll see them, you know, a pig hunting truck in a gas station, and there's like four pit bulls in the back of the truck with dog collars. On,
just,
you know, or with the radio collars on their
just thing. In between hunts,
yeah,
huh?
Just hanging out, you know. And what have those dogs seen? You know, they've wrestled big pigs, but I've seen a big Rottweiler 2 days after get totally zipped open by a boar, a male pig, where it was really aggressive with the pig, and the boar attacked, and with the with its tusk, zipped open its intestines.
Whoa.
And so my friends had to wrap the pig up with duct.
The dog, with duct tape
overnight until they could bring it to the vet the next morning.
Oh my gosh.
To keep its insides from falling out.
Whoa. Like,
yeah, so
yeah, pigs are
seriously dangerous.
Deal.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the big wave surfer Shane Dorian?
I've heard the name.
Yeah, he lives over on, I think, Kauai, I think.
Okay.
And he's one of the best big wave surfers. And he's been in a couple movies, like, I forget what the movies were, but he's you know, known as being one of the best surfers in the world. And he's a white guy, but lives and grew up in Hawaii. And and he's gotten into hunting recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the last, probably, I think, like, within the last 5 years. And sometimes he'll go around the world. And he hunts in Hawaii, Colorado, New Zealand.
Wow.
And he's really gotten into the crossbow thing. And it's fascinating to listen to him talk about his adventures doing that. You know, it's just, I can no longer... You know, back in my raw vegan days, I had so much judgment about people that did those things.
Yeah, me too.
But it's just, I can no longer do that because at the very least, if you have some unconscious person who's doing that and just sort of, you know, rah-rah go America, kind of just out to kill everything, even those people, the fact that they're doing what they're doing is removing themselves from that weird system that we're just talking about. You know, so even if they're not with the right intent, at least they're doing that, you know? And I don't like to see those people either because, you know, I just got done reading a book called The Vision by Tom Brown.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
I reread it. I read it back in the early 2000s, but it's just so good. It's a story about this this white kid. It's a true story of him being befriended by this ancient sort of old Indian guy.
Okay.
And he showed him the ways of the land, of the forest, and taught him all the ancient ways and stuff. And the subtitle is One Man's Search for Enlightenment. And it's really cool. And so the connection they would have to hunting, and they would prepare themselves, like they would do sweat lodges and prepare for like 6 months to a year before their first hunt.
Oh yeah.
You know, spiritually praying and praying over the animals. And obviously the people that are the sort of rah, rah, go America, kill everything in my path aren't like that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's nice to see people have a reverence for life and the food that you are connected to when you kill it. You know, I mean, I have a feeling one day that's going to be me. You know, I'm going to be doing, you know, hunting and things. I just don't know when that's going to be.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Isn't it weird how you have these intuitions that you just know, like, it's just a collision. At some point in your life, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Like, you just know, and you're not in any rush to make it happen.
Uh-huh.
I have the same thing with ayahuasca. I know one day I'm going to have a real long love affair or something with ayahuasca. I just know that someday I will do it.
Uh-huh.
It's weird how that is, right?
Yeah, yeah, it'll happen.
Yeah.
I've done it twice.
Have you?
Yeah, I've done it twice.
Yeah. Really?
Recently? Three times. A couple years ago on the Big Island, probably 2 years ago, and then another time on the Big Island, I think a year ago, and then that was, I've done it twice, but both amazing, but it really depends on the shaman. You know, so you're extra sensitive, you know, so everything they're doing, you're really looking at it, you know, through a clear eye.
It's
so
heightened. Everything's heightened, right?
So if someone you feel is not quite authentic, you know, it'll really be obvious, you know, so
You can notice someone else or you can notice yourself not being authentic?
Probably both, but you'll notice that if the shaman is the real deal or not, you know. So I had a peyote experience in New York City in 2009 with the shaman, and his name was Colin, and he's actually going to be on the Big Island.
No way.
He, really tall guy from French Guiana, bald, really tall black dude, and you never know walking by on the street, but he had to set up this altar with all, you know, like flowers and candles and everything. And then, I mean, it's just, I don't even know. And so he does like a tobacco smoke session and then has us like singing some songs. And then you just, you know, having some of the medicine. And then after a while, like he's having you sing like even weirder songs. Weirder. This is my like definition, weirder.
Yeah.
And then like one of the songs. Nothing is said, nothing is heard, and the heart starts dancing with the master. La-di-da, la-di-da.
So the whole group's singing this.
Yeah. Starts dancing with the master.
No
and
way.
There was only four of us this time. And he was like, he's making a stand up and looking in the eye, and you're singing it for like 10 minutes, you know? So something's going on. Like,
and so were you, had already done the peyote, or was this after?
Okay. Yeah, had eaten it. Mm-hmm. And he split it up into three servings. And this other woman who the actual ceremony was for, she vomited after the second one, you know, and she wanted to go to bed by like 1 o'clock. She was tired, but he made everybody stay up until 8 a.m.
Oh, really?
You know, he was like, yeah, he wasn't having it. It was so funny. And oh my God, just by like 4 o'clock a.m., I knew I had to let go. I was expecting to get back and let, you know, my girlfriend thought I was going to be back like at 5 a.m. or something. And I was my ex-girlfriend. This was years ago. Uh-huh. And so, I'm like, there's no way I'm getting back on the subway at this time, back to Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was, just released, you know, I was in the moment, I had let it go, and just singing the songs. And then he stood each one of us up individually in front of the altar and was like talking to us and blowing smoke in our face. And then the other people are like praying, you know, kind of going like this, singing the songs. And all of a sudden, your temples start tingling. This is what happened. I don't want to project, but temples start tingling, and then it moved over into your forehead, and just like, zzz, and then it really started tingling where my entire head was like needles, pins and needles, just electrified, like, zzz,
wow.
And it was coming out of my hands. And I was like, oh my, I was still lucid enough to know that this was crazy. Like, I was like, oh my God, I didn't expect this. I thought it was going to be like a mushroom trip, like see some sight, you know.
Yeah, psychedelic.
Yeah. This was way more electric. Like, it's just, and then he put this rose petal, this rose blossom in my hand, and it just like shook apart, you know. I was like, it was just shaking. And then like tears started coming down my face, and I was like, oh my God, you know. And then my vision started to go kind of like reddish black. Like, I just couldn't see anything. And he was like, everybody, the spirit is in the room. And then he made me sing these like a few notes, like, oh, like, it was crazy. Yeah.
And then that's
he's
so
like,
funny.
He's like, you have spirit, a lot of spirit guides here, like protectors here around you, you know, all this stuff. And then just talking about some things. And then the lady who it was for, she came up to me and she was like hugging me and crying me. And I was just so, oh my God, it was nuts. And then like he sat me down and like wrapped me in a towel. And I just sat there for like 2 hours, like watching everything else happen.
And this was like the morning after. This
was
at the end.
Yeah, it was like 6 a.m.
Wow.
And then he had us eat some food, and I took the subway back like at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And still like really feeling the medicine and just being so uplifted from that experience. Like, it was so cathartic. Like, everything just opened up. And then I get back and my girlfriend's like, you're on drugs. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're high still. Like, of course you're feeling good. Like, oh my God. And I broke up with her 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's what that was for.
Yeah. That was my moment of clarity. I was like, you're out. Like, this is not cool.
Oh my God.
It was such a beautiful experience, you know?
That's cool.
And then after that, like, I had done an ayahuasca ceremony, but it was more of a Santo Daime style, mm-hmm. where they're singing and a lot of motion and humans. And
did you do this in New York?
This was in Big Island.
Big Island.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, was the shaman native to the Big Island, or is he someone that lives somewhere else?
He probably lived there for quite a long time, maybe originally from California.
Okay.
White guy.
Yeah.
Alexander.
Okay.
Alexander Hanslick puts on a good ceremony, but it's a lot going on. You know, like, there's lots of songs, and if you don't know the songs right away, you know that it's a beautiful song, but you're not fully connecting with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy in New York who I just mentioned,
yeah.
He had us singing songs like, this little light of mine,
no
I'm
way.
Gonna let it shine.
Really?
Yeah, and just, whoa, it would hit you. Like, you start to get chills when you're singing it. You're like, okay, I get it.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was stuff like that. You know, and then, you know, Alexander had us paging through the books trying to find the next thing. And, you know, you're on ayahuasca, and that's not what you want to do. You don't want to be paging through stuff.
No.
And then other people are vomiting around you, and it's a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know? But by the second sip, he started going off on the didgeridoo. And whoa, I just started like feeling, you know, like this. And then I was sitting Indian style on the floor, and all of a sudden I'm just like this. And I feel like an anaconda is like pulsating towards me and starts to like go like this and is about to like consume me.
Oh my gosh.
Like this. And then, he started sputtering on the didgeridoo a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And you could hear at this moment, other people are puking. Like, it was a heavy moment because he was like, wah, wah, wah. And it was so pure. It wasn't like singing. It was like this pure sound.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
There's something about that didgeridoo.
It kicked in. Like, the medicine just snapped. It kicked in hard. And then so you're hearing people vomit, and then it snapped me out of it. And then I open my eyes and I look around and everybody's wearing white. So everything that's white is now rainbow color. So something happened with the rods and cones in my eyes where anytime they're wearing like a white headdress or a white shirt, it was rainbow.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, it was daytime, you know? And then they stopped and there's the birds are singing and it was in the silence, like the nature and the didgeridoo, that it was most powerful.
Wow.
You know, not really the human stuff. That was a little too much. So I've known people that will kind of excuse themselves and go off into the nature by themselves while other people are squirming on the floor and, you know, in their vomit and everything.
Yeah.
So it's tough. Like it's maybe good to be around that energy because you're going to help people or power through it. But also I found that it takes me away from my own discovery, you know, or the biggest discoveries of my life have been on my own usually, usually eating magic mushrooms on my own. You know, of course it's fun to do it with friends and check out stuff, but when you're by yourself, that's when the real lessons would come in.
Because you can really set the intention the way you want.
Yeah.
And exactly how you want, how long you want. You can really kind of dial all that stuff in.
Yeah. And because your energy is so strong, if you're focusing in on someone else, whether they're in a good place or a bad place, it's better to be with the nature and with your own energy.
Yeah.
You know, like Terrence McKenna would say, eat a big dose and sit in a closet, you know, in a dark closet. And that's where the lessons would come in, you know. So I found that to be really true. I've never done that in the dark closet, but being
that would be interesting.
You
know, how about combining that with like a float tank?
People have done that. I know people that would do ketamine. That was a thing. You know, I've never done ketamine.
I think John Lilly, the guy that came up with that, did all that
stuff.
That's
what it was. So pretty interesting.
Because really all it gets down to is just personal enlightenment, growth, personal growth, and looking at yourself in a spiritual way and figuring out, you know, what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, you know, what direction is the course of my life going? That's a big one too, because a lot of people are just, they don't know what they want to do. You know, they don't know what their strengths are, their weaknesses are. They don't know what they're passionate about. I mean, how many times do you run across people, and me too, people write in and it's like, they just don't know. They don't know what their unique gifts are. They don't have any passions. And, you know, I think the system is sort of designed to sort of, you know, reward the people that are responsible and take and just, you know, set aside everything that makes them unique to make money to pay the bills. You know, and but when you get an experience like that, see, I'm just talking about the experience that you had personally from outside perspective, but I can imagine that that really wakes you up. You know, you start to see things in a new way. And it's the same thing. I think it's probably the same thing too, is like what you and I have had with food and health and spirituality, except when you do it sort of in a non-psychoactive way, it's more organic. It just takes years and years and years of developing and learning and growing. But you can probably have that same experience like you had in an ayahuasca or whatever in a condensed amount of time.
And a lot of people would maybe shun that as if it's too easy. But I see it as gifts from the divine, gifts from nature that have been put here for us to speed it up. Because I feel like we don't have enough time right now. Like, and also in our back in the day when we were all hunter gatherers in smaller groups, these plant medicines were much more available and probably very likely a normal part of each person's life. So are we actually deficient now in these plant medicines? Where people that are running around with their heads chopped off, they need some of that stuff. And if they had it, it would get their head on right, and then they could get focused with their dharma, get on their mission again. And I felt that all the time. Like when I would even just smoke a little bit of cannabis, hang out with my buddies, you're not getting the download. Then you'd go and be off on your own afterwards. And that's when you'd start thinking like, wow, am I a really good son or a boyfriend or a grandson? Like looking like it dissolves the ego for a little bit. You're looking at yourself through the third person. And that's what we need. You know, you got to look at it through a different lens. And in our world, people are just kind of stumbling along blind behind the wheel, you know, and they're, it's a, like you said, like it's kind of encouraged in a way just to keep going, you know, and just keep paying the bills and keep it steady because you don't want to rock the boat.
No.
Because God forbid, like you have to mess your whole story up with this new discovery and
self-realization.
Yeah, like everything you taught was wrong or everything that you focused on for the past 30, 40 years wasn't on the mark. So it's kind of like, but I've always been one that wanted the truth. I wanted clarity.
That's how I am.
Yeah, open to being
wrong. I don't care
wrong.
What it is.
Absolutely.
I just want to believe it.
I raised my hand when I left veganism, and I was like, you know, I was probably wrong about this for long-term use. I got a lot of benefits out of it during the cleansing phase, and it was awesome, and met a lot of cool people, but I'm going to, you know, swallow my words here, whatever the term is, and swallow my pride, and be like, maybe I was wrong as far as, in my mind, prescribing it for everybody for their entire lives, like not thinking about pregnant women or people that, like little kids that are building cells, and so I was humbled by that.
Yeah, and that's a good place to be, is someone who's willing to look at themselves and say, you know, I made a mistake, or not necessarily I made a mistake, but just, you know what, I'm changing the course and the direction of the way I think. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
you know, and that to me is like is one of the ways you can look at someone and realize, are they really after truth, or are they really after just selling something or selling an idea that, you know, I've been a vegan for so long, so I got to keep kicking this can down the road, even if I don't believe it, because I got this whole company that sells all these products that are promoting raw veganism. You know, it takes a really strong person to dissolve the ego. And in order to do that, the spiritual work is required. Yeah. You know, you have to do these things.
Yeah. There's on that, there was a guy, obviously a lot of the listeners out there know Alan Watts, and I was driving to a landscaping gig on a Sunday morning listening to KPFK, and every Sunday Alan Watts is on there, old recordings, he's since passed, and he had a recording called Bus or Tram, and it talks about how in our culture, our leaders especially will not admit that they were ever wrong. Like, there's this huge aversion to admitting that you may have been wrong about something.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
If you can't do that, you can never move on and grow.
No.
And so when we see our leaders like that, people are encouraged to, like, oh, don't admit that you're wrong, or just like, But yeah, you have to step back and be like, okay, something isn't right here, so I need to fix it.
That to me is a mark of a good leader.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
You got to do that.
So when I see all this stuff currently, you know, people don't want to admit any reasons why, you know, they were defeated or this or that, or it's just like, no, come on, be real with yourself and be real with the people. And it just goes on and on. So
that's cool.
Yeah. It's a big thing for us. So I love people that can admit that they were wrong and that they want to be corrected, or they want to learn. That's a beautiful person.
Totally.
I really admire them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're to wrap it up here, but cool. Let people know about Grow Paradise, what you're doing, your retreats and all that stuff.
So Grow Paradise is the company I created back in 2011. It's the idea that humans can indeed grow paradise. So we hit it from a few different fronts. We do the retreats where we immerse people in a 1 week experience where they're living the paradise lifestyle. They're going to organic farms. They're foraging, making food from the land. We go snorkeling, we swim with dolphins, we go to the volcano, waterfalls, just a really fun communal experience for 1 week. And then we can show people that you can actually live like this. You can monetize off it. Mm-hmm. You can live almost without bills if you want to set it up right. And then on the other side of it, we do the edible landscaping. So showing people how to plant edible species, fruit trees, nut trees, coconuts, all sorts of things like that.
So it's a crash course on someone's, hey, like, I need to turn my backyard into a garden. They go to a retreat, they can learn all the skills required.
Yeah. I set it up in a real easygoing way. Like, I think maybe we will develop more of a curriculum where I would always have people like draw out their paradise garden by the end of the week, and they show it with people. Not as many people are excited to do that. It's
really
funny. Like, I really have to put my foot down and be like, we're doing this. You're going to show everybody at the end. Cause otherwise they're like, I just want to hang out and do the tours and, you know, go eat durians and stuff. So, I don't want to be like this hard ass that's always trying to push stuff on people.
Some agenda. So
I try and make it an immersion experience where we just visit cool farmers, and then the inspiration goes a long ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
how many times a year do you do the retreats?
Right now it's been twice.
Twice.
But
a
now
year?
Now I'm going to be living there more. So I'd like to do it once a month. I mean, it's much easier to fill it in the winter than in, you know, the summer
months.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Yeah, people just sign up much quicker. But once I start living there for real, I would almost like to do a daily tour where tourists can come, and tourists that are just here from other islands.
That's an awesome idea, because if people just go to Hawaii to visit and they're staying there, you know, they can drive over to you and just have a tour and hang out and learn.
So, yeah, we'll do the farm-to-table experience. They can see the gardens.
So maybe they'll pay for like a tour or whatever it is. Okay.
Where they can pick stuff. you know, like a pick your own, and then we'll make them a big lunch that's directly from the land. And maybe it's like $50 per person.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That would be really cool. Instead of, you know, because when I really appreciate that people fly from Europe and the mainland U.S. to come to these retreats, because I know it's an expense.
Yeah, it's a long
way. You know, I really price the retreats very fairly. I want people to have access to this. And I do it efficiently. That's why I keep competitive with the prices. But I realize that people are dropping, you know, $2,000 for 1 week with their airplane, you know. So I would love it for just to do like a one-day thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's awesome.
It's coming in.
So to find out more about, probably the best way is to sign up to your newsletter list, right?
Actually, I don't. Do you have one? I used to do a newsletter, and I just really never. I post on Facebook a lot and Instagram.
So follow it on there.
Yeah, my Instagram is Anthony A. Anderson, and then I do have a Grow Paradise too, but it's more active with that one. Facebook as well, same things, and then growparadise.com is the website you want to go to.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Awesome, dude. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. No worries. All right. For those that are listening to the audio version of the podcast instead of the version that we put out on YouTube, you're going to get an extra little bonus. So I'll be right back to break down the show. But before that, we'll be right back right after this.
In the 1950s, Dr. Joanna Budwig had a 90% success rate curing people of cancer using fresh pressed flax oil and cottage cheese. The combination of dairy protein with unoxidized flax oil was able to restore oxygen transfer. It is now well known the cells of our bodies require unoxidized omega-3 and 6 seed oils to both attract and absorb oxygen. For the first time, there are seed oils with virtually zero oxidation, even after 1 year at room temperature. All other, quote, cold-pressed seed oils are structurally damaged and significantly oxidized by the time you consume them. Andrea's seed oils retain the correct shape, electron content, and information that is quickly communicated to all the cells in your body. By taking these sacred seed oils, your whole body will begin to use oxygen as the Creator designed it. Now combine this with our Life Force Enhanced One World Whey Protein, and you have a winning combination to confer energy and health like never before. Click on the 5-seed oil banner right here on ExtremeHealthRadio.com. That's ExtremeHealthRadio.com.
Okay, I hope you guys enjoyed that show with Mr. Anthony Anderson from GrowParadise.com. Make sure to check out his website. Let me take a look here really quickly. We are recording this in December 20th, 2016. So let me take a look on his when his next retreat is. If you're listening to this in the future, you can disregard this and just check out GrowParadise.com. But in case you're wondering, the big island of Hawaii, these Hawaiian words are so funny. It's hard to pronounce. Pipikoikeo Point. I don't know even how you say that. Hamakua Coast, the big island of Hawaii, January 14th to January 21st, 2017 is when he's going to do his next retreat. Sounds really cool. And that sounds really, really cool. I like what he's doing. Let's see, touring organic coffee places, isolated waterfalls, learning how to grow food, organic beekeeping, which I've been really interested in lately, beekeeping. And, you know, some of the things I've been really interested in lately are mushrooms. If you follow our Instagram account, you probably know that. Really into making medicinal mushrooms and herbs and working with plants and making teas. Maybe it's because it's the winter. But this is the first time I've really gotten into it. I have, I've been into making teas and the medicinal mushrooms and stuff like that for a long time, but not necessarily to the extent that I am now. So we bought some organic, wild-crafted shaga mushroom. And if you guys are familiar with shaga, shaga is incredible. Shaga is insane. It's off the charts in terms of its medicinal properties on the human body. It's anti-tumor. I think of all the different components. It has the highest amount of melanin, so it's great for your skin. So if you've been in exposure to sunlight, too much sun, sunburns, things like that, it'll be great for that. Shaga is just incredible. It's incredible. I was reading something the other day where it was talking about the antioxidants. I think they said like raw cacao is somewhere around, 300 or 400 on the antioxidant scale. And shaga mushroom is something like 35,000. Or some crazy number like that. So shaga mushroom, man, I would highly encourage you guys to start getting into making shaga mushroom. Shaga and reishi, those are the top two mushrooms. And then, one of the things I like to do is I like to get into things in stages. I don't know what it is with me. It takes a long time for me to get into things.
It's really bizarre. I don't know. Each person, each of us are different, but for, you know, some reason it takes me a long time to get into things. Like, but once I'm into them, I can be into them for a long time and it's really easy. I can make it part of my life. And so, I think I get that from my mom because, she's so funny. She's got a rebounder. So I got her rebounding. I say, hey, mom, have you, because they'll have their rebounder in their living room. So she's constantly walking next to it all day long, you know. And I'll say, hey, have you been doing your rebounding and stuff? And, you know, and she's like, no, it's, I'm going to start that at the beginning of the year. And I just laugh because it's so funny. Like when you walk by it, you can just jump up and down 5 or 10 times. And if you walk by it, you know, 15, 20 times a day doing stuff around the house, you know, you got yourself a nice little rebounding session for the day, you know, but she has to have it in her mind that she, you know, will start the rebounding at a certain day. But I think the reason why I laugh is because, you know, I'm the same way. And so, you know, it took me a long time to get into medicinal mushrooms. And, instead of starting with ginseng and astragalus and all these different mushrooms and, there's all kinds of really incredible mushrooms. You know, just start with the top two, reishi and shaga. Those are the king and queen of medicinal mushrooms. And they are plant medicines, you know, and they're extremely powerful. I would highly encourage you to start making mushrooms a part of your daily life. And, you know, even more than maybe juicing. You know, juicing is, you know, it's pretty time intensive. But here's what I do with the mushrooms. I just boil, what is a Vitamix full? How much is this? Like 64 ounces? So my pot holds 128 ounces, two Vitamix fulls. Is that right? 64, 128. and so it's 128 ounces. I fill it up with water and I put just a handful of chunks of shaga mushroom, bring it up to a boil, let it boil for, maybe 30 minutes or so. And then I'll put the lid on it and I'll turn it down from a boil to a mid simmer and, maybe a level 4. And then I'll let it simmer there on that for maybe a couple hours. And then maybe an hour after I've started simmering it, I might add some water back into it. So it might have, taken about, 40 ounces of water. It cooked down a little bit. So I'll add another 40 ounces and I'll keep it simmering there for another hour. And then I just turn it off and the shaga sinks to the bottom and then I just let it sit there and steep overnight, keep the lid on. And in the morning, it's all cooled and it's cooled naturally. You know, you haven't spiked the temperature too high or too low too quick. And then I'll just strain it off and I'll put those in mason jars, take the remaining shaga chunks and I'll put those, I'll cut them up with scissors, to little smaller pieces to expose more surface area, put those in the fridge or the freezer. If you put them in the freezer after you boil them or before you boil them, actually it's probably better after you boil them once because that way there's some water still on them. But the chitin, that is a part of the shaga mushroom is, very, very difficult to break into even with high heat. But when there's water on the mushroom and you put it in the freezer and freeze all those chunks, it helps to sort of explode. The water molecules expand, breaking the chitin, which allows more surface area internally of each of the shaga chunks. So that's one of the things I've been doing, and it's super easy. And talk about medicine, man. You have this deep black mushroom. It's almost black on your first boil. And it's the deepest, darkest color. It's awesome. And I just put that in the fridge and then I make my teas out of it. One of the cool things I've been doing, this is really, really good. So what I've been doing too at night, I've been doing so much shaga mushroom lately, is I'll take one of those teas, mason jars full of shaga mushroom. I'll fill up my little, I got a little Sir Thrival, if you guys are familiar with Sir Thrival. And by the way, the rebounders that I mentioned before, they're in our store as well. The ones that we recommend, the Bellicon, and so is Sir Thrival, all of their products. But I have the mug, from Sir Thrival and I fill that up with shaga, put that on the teapot and boil that up. And then what I've been doing too, what goes so good with it is, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the, four sigmatic foods, four sigmatic, or is it four sigma? If you look up four sigmatic, maybe on Instagram or just type that into Google. And I buy their mushroom packets. And so I'll have the shaga mushroom and then I'll put a packet of the reishi in there just for extra. And then I'll do some liquid stevia, like 10 drops of liquid stevia. Just stir that up and and boil that up. Oh my gosh. Actually, I boil it and then I add the stevia and mushroom reishi after that. And man, it's incredible. It's really, really incredible. I don't know why I'm so into the shaga lately, but it's super good for your immune system. It helps. It has a huge array of beta D glucans, and we sell beta glucans on our site. But I think that in our store, actually, I think the most powerful beta glucans you can ever buy. And if you're unable to buy shaga mushroom or get beta glucans, this is immune system food. So you're feeding your immune system with these beta glucans. But I do both. I take the beta glucans that we sell in our store, as well as making food with it. But shaga is just loaded with beta glucans, and it's great for normalizing blood pressure, cholesterol levels. It's really great for ulcers and gastritis. And let's see what else. It's really great for it's antimicrobial, obviously, and it helps to repair DNA. There's a study a while back. Where pre-treated cells that were pre-treated with a shaga mushroom extract were then treated with H2O2 to induce oxidative stress. The pre-treated cells displayed less damage than the cells that did not receive the shaga extract. So it helps to repair damaged DNA. Obviously, it's antiviral. It's completely antioxidant as well, like I said before. Has phytosterols, has beta-unolic acid and betulin. SODs, which are superoxide dismutase. It's crazy. Shaga is just so awesome. And once you make a batch, that batch could last you for like a week. And then you could just, take a little bit each day as your medicine. So it's pretty cool. Let's see. What else? What I like about Anthony and what he's doing over there at Grow Paradise, and we talked about during the show, is that it's essentially... He's teaching you to be more, what's the right word? He's teaching you to be more self-sufficient and self-reliant. And I think that is going into the future. I think that is one of the most important things we could ever do. Learning skills that will allow us to rely less on other people. And so those skills could be anything from making your own clothes. It could be anything from learning self-defense, learning how to cook, learning how to hunt, learning how to forage, learning how to garden, learning how to collect rainwater. Learning how to fix things around the house. I mean, all these things, these are all skills that are developed. And, I'm the first one to say that I am getting into this whole way of life myself. And, I'm no expert in any one of these areas. And that's what's so awesome about life, man, is that you can learn this stuff. There's so many things to be interested in. My gosh, there's so much you can learn and so much you can get into. I mean, just archery and learning how to hunt by itself is a pursuit that could take years to master. Self-defense, learning how to shoot a gun, learning how to, like I said, archery, learning how to hunt, growing your spiritual practice, growing your personal development practice, growing your meditation practice, growing your physicality with Qigong, the yoga, and learning skills around the house and canning and pickling and, I don't know, man. I think that the more skills we can pick up in regards to taking care of ourselves and learning how to understand what medicines and what plants and what herbs are going to be beneficial for us in case something goes wrong. I mean, this is huge. This is absolutely huge to be able to know, because you know what the thing is if you're not self-reliant, if you don't know these things, which I think should have been taught to us in school. But then again, if you're reliant on the schooling system to teach you anything meaningful and anything that actually has any real value in the real world that we live in, good luck. The schooling system is going to teach you how to be a good slave. The schooling system is going to teach you how to be a good taxpayer. The schooling system is going to teach you how to get in debt with 4 years of college. It's not going to teach you anything. The schooling system is not going to be there for you. The system that we're currently living under is going to teach you how to be a good debt slave, economic wage slave. So it's up to us to start learning how to really take care of ourselves. And so that's what's so cool about becoming more self-reliant and taking responsibility for everything that you're doing, So it's really important. I think it's really, really important to learn how to take care of yourself, because here's the thing. The system is designed to run on fear. And fear sells like nothing else. Fear is the number one emotional response that they try to put on you so that they can get you to act a certain way, to buy something, to act in a certain way. So fear is going to be the number one thing that they use to drive the masses. And so if you understand that you can use, like we did an awesome show all about ozone therapy. And if you really want to learn about ozone and you really want to become self-reliant and you really want to learn about how ozone can affect your body, listen to the show we did with Marcus. Let me pull that up. Let's see. That is Extreme Health Radio. Let me get the correct number. Because once you listen to a show like that, you're never going to fear really any health condition ever again, in my opinion. That was episode 490. So if you go to extremehealthradio.com/490, you can listen to the show we did with Marcus from Truly Heal all about ozone and how to simply, easily use ozone. It's got a whole package that you can buy the generator, you can buy the instructions, the videos, the course, all. It's like a turnkey system. All you got to do is, I mean, I think it costs like $1,000, but I mean, it's a one-time thing. And you can use ozone for so many different, we go into all the different areas where you could use ozone and you can use it for almost anything. You could use it on yourself, your family, your sons, your daughters, people, friends in your life that are dealing with chronic conditions, and ozone is incredible. And so that's the thing. It's like you start learning that, hey, let's say I've got MRSA or staph, and I'm not making any claims here because, you know, if we make claims, the powers that be don't like that when we make claims. So I'm not making any claims here. But if you were one to say that if I've got MRSA or staph, if I understand ozone and how to really take care of myself and my immune system and do a whole protocol against MRSA using ozone, you know, then it's like I'm not going to run to the doctor. The doctor's going to put you on antibiotics. It's going to put you on all these medications that are going to dampen your immune system. It's going to really pull you down, you know? And so when you start learning about techniques and substances that can help you heal, help your body heal, that's powerful. You know, it's really, really powerful. And I think that is the direction we're headed as a culture, as a society, is learning how to become more self-sufficient and learning how to really, really take care of yourself. And in my opinion too, all of this stuff, there needs to be a spiritual component to all of this stuff. Because if you are someone who's just constantly fearful of the next outbreak or virus that's coming along, you know, and you watch the news and, you know, I think that if you don't have a spiritual practice, and I've been getting into this more and more lately, meditation, Qigong, we have a Qigong course in our store that I really, you know, I've been doing every day. It's just 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening that really, really grounds you and, you know, really helps you to deal with life stresses and things like that. And doing meditation, I've been doing that every day too, and combining those two together. You know, I mean, it comes down to mindset and your purpose and getting in alignment with all of that. You know, because if you're not living your purpose, it's going to be a real drain and stress on your immune system. You know, and so having a spiritual approach, because you start, you know, I think one of the first things that is going to benefit your health more than anything else is just turning off the news, turning off any negativity, any friends that are bringing you down, anybody in your life that is, you know, pulling you down and pulling you off and taking you off course. That's going to be the biggest improvement to your health ever. And so, you know, that's more of a personal development thing, but, you know, having a strong spiritual practice and knowing where you're going and not reacting with fear to what they're throwing at us all the time and detaching from those things is step number one. And then you can start investing in the bank account of yourself through spiritual practices and personal development practices and, you know, reading and investing in yourself and self-care, stuff like that. And so when you start doing these things, you're not going to be dominated by your emotions. You're not going to be dominated by your fears and dominated by your reactions to, you know, what they're telling you on the news and all this kind of garbage. So, having a strong spiritual practice is, I think, the number one priority for all of us. Cause all these things we can do on a physical level are great, you know, and we should be doing them, but what they should be doing is propping up and supporting a foundation that is a spiritual practice and a spiritual walk and learning, you know, learning how to get in touch with yourself and reconnect with God, however you see fit, however you define God and however that, whatever that means to you, you know. And so combining, you know, the spirituality concept and practices with the health spiritual practices, I'm telling you, it is super powerful. You keep doing this stuff every day and you're going to be a different person. People aren't going to know who you are. And they're going to just wonder what the heck happened to so-and-so, because they used to be more like me. And now they're doing these things in their life and they're just doing awesome things. And my God, they're almost completely different than how I remember them. And that's the whole point, right? Is to grow and to continue to learn and gain a new perspective on life and all of that. And that's part of what Anthony is teaching people through his work at Grow Paradise. It's really cool, man. It's super, super, super rebellious act to grow your own food. You want to protest, if you want to sign petitions and march in the streets, that's great. But, you know, if that's really what your calling is, consider growing some food. People don't think about that as a rebellious act, but man, if you really realize if everyone started growing their own food, if everyone on earth grew, gosh, I don't know, I think I said this during the show, 30 or 40% of their own food, you don't have to grow all of it. Maybe if you want, you can make that your goal, but you don't have to grow all of it. Just grow some of it. Just grow some of your food. And that way you're really like, imagine, you know, getting a juicer, like one of these pure juicers, you know, it's like a cold pressed juicer, picking cucumbers and lettuces from your backyard that you've grown in a permaculture way with rock dust and ocean minerals in the soil and all these things. Imagine you pick those, they're fresh. You don't even have to wash them unless you're concerned about chemtrails or tire dust living by freeways or airports or things. But you know, you don't have to wash these things and you put them right in your juicer, fresh right away, getting all those living enzymes, all the minerals, all the phytonutrients, all that stuff right in your cells within minutes. I mean, talk about medicine, right? So it's a powerful thing, man. Because not only are you putting a dent in the food industry and the food system and the whole system of agriculture that's not sustainable in the United States and around the world, not only are you putting a dent in not buying their foods. So when people don't invest money in those companies can no longer have the funds to be able to continue to expand, right? So you have that side of it. But then also, you're giving your body medicine because you're growing it yourself. So there's this intention aspect too of the food we eat. So you're growing your own food or some of it and you're juicing. Maybe you just grow the food that you juice. Maybe that will motivate you to juice more. Who knows, right? But it's a double-edged sword because not only are you stealing profits from those companies that you may not, you know, want to support, but you're also feeding yourself superior nutrition. And by doing that, you're going to become, excuse me, I had a little bug in my throat. You're going to become so healthy that you're not going to get sick. If you don't get sick, then you're not going to be in the hospital. If you're not in the hospital, you're not going to be required or coerced into taking their pharmaceutical drugs and medications and antibiotics and things. So when you go into a hospital, it's like this downward spiral that you have to really protect yourself from. And the key is to, you know, at the very top of a whirlpool, you just want to avoid that initial change of direction that gets you pulled down just a little bit. And then you start going around in circles, right? So you want to avoid that upper rim and that upper area. So we do that by taking care of ourselves and not getting involved in the world of drama and the food people eat and really, you know, having a strong practice of self-care. So, you know, it really impacts a lot of people. And by not being sick and having more energy, you're able to do whatever it is you're supposed to do in this world. And that's making the world a better place to some degree and whatever you choose to do. So it's an awesome thing, you know? I mean, it's a super revolutionary idea to grow your own food. And I'm a big fan of Anthony and what he's doing. And I'm a big, you know, believer in what he's doing. And I've been following his work for years, friends with him for a long time. He was on our show years ago. We interviewed him back when he was, I think 2012, maybe, when he was, I think he was in France or something. That was a cool show. I remember that. But yeah, so if you're interested in learning how to do all this stuff and really, you know, taking charge of learning how to grow your own food, You know, take that on as a goal, maybe in 2017, or if you're listening to this 2018, or, you know, whenever you're listening to this, take that on as a goal. If you feel called to, if you don't, that's cool too. Cause we all have different things, you know, that we're interested in doing. And sometimes, you know, someone might have a goal, to grow their own food, but before those goals, they wanted to learn how to make their own teas or herbal salves or something like that. So just have a goal of doing something of more, self-sustaining kind of a lifestyle. So, all right, that was enough of a rant for me. This was, let me make sure I get the show correctly. I have it here as 468, but that's not correct. I think it's 494. Let me make sure. Looking at my files here. Yep, 494. Okay, so if you want to check out the actual sponsors and links to the stuff, to his website and all that, it is extremehealthradio.com/494. And you can, you know, check out his website and all that kind of good stuff. Let's see. Let me see here really quickly. Let me tell you about our upcoming shows. Let me go to our calendar here. We do shows 3 days a week. Next week, let's see. We have Carrie Gray coming on the show here pretty soon. We're going to be talking about green insurance. So that's going to be, let's see, if this is 494, that's going to be episode 495. And that's going to be an alternative to Obamacare and private insurances. So that'll be a really good show. Green Insurance. We'll talk to her. We talked to her before years ago, but the whole platform of what they're doing is changing. Then we're going to be talking to Melissa Hennig from Raw Paleo Melissa. She's a cool chick. She's doing, raw food and paleo food, but it's all raw. So she's doing like kind of a primal. I think they call that a primal diet. So she's doing, I just on her Instagram recently. And she's doing like raw ceviche. Obviously ceviche is raw, but it's like chicken, and she's doing all kinds of really cool stuff with raw animal products too. So if you want some good recipes, if you're interested in eating raw animal meats, listen to the show we did with Ogenus von der Planitz. We did that a while back before he translated his body into a light being. But he moved on to bigger and better things, and he's no longer with us on the planet, but he did a cool show with us on eating raw animal products. So, I really think that is the, gosh, that's the apex, I think. I think there's a big, I don't know. I think eating raw animal products and, you know, still a plant-based diet, but maybe have some cooked vegetables, but then do raw animal product. I think that's where the real mana is. Then we're going to be talking with our friend Jeff Mayer over at Rapid Release Technology. If you guys have not seen this machine, it's in our store. It's called the Rapid Release Pro 2, and I'm such a big fan of this thing, man. I had a debilitating back injury unlike anything I'd ever experienced in my life in June of 2016. For the backstory, I was crippled, man. I could not walk, and I initially injured my back a couple years ago in the gym doing bent over rows with way too much weight, and my lower back just exploded, and it was the worst ever. It was the worst ever, and because I had bad form unknowingly at the gym, every now and then I would re-injure my back. And I re-injured it probably, let's see, that was June. So sometime in May, early June 2016, and I could not walk, man. After a week, it was so bad. Usually after about a week, I'm starting to make some progress. After a week this time, I was worse. It would take me literally, this is no joke, we were living in a little apartment back then, and it would take me about an hour and 15 minutes after I woke up to get from one room to the next, to get up from bed and to go to the office chair where I do my shows and do my work. It took me an hour and 15 minutes. I couldn't even stand up straight. It was so painful. After a week, I literally was crying because I was just like, oh my gosh. You know, it's worse after a week. I'm never going to be able to walk again. I was crying. I was really crying. And then Kate knew a friend of a friend of a lady who came over and helped bring this machine to release trigger points. And man, it changed the course of my healing like nothing else. So I'm super excited to talk about this thing because it had such a profound impact on my life. And it's called the Rapid Release Pro 2. I use it now every single day, multiple times a day, in multiple ways too. And I use it in ways that they don't even advertise. And I think that it's doing some things internally, like stimulating my thyroid and liver and gallbladder, stomach and intestines, small and large intestines. They don't even tell you about these things, but I've learned to use it in unique ways. And so anyway, we're going to be talking with him. Then we're going to be talking about inclined bed. Ross Singer, our show that we did with him, and he talked a bit about this doing an incline on your bed and how that affects your blood pressure. And it's such an incredibly healing thing, and it's free. And all you got to do is put your bed, the head of your bed, on an incline, and it has some profound effects. So that's pretty cool. So we'll be talking about that kind of. You guys know too, we are going to be launching a membership site very soon. Well, I shouldn't say very soon. We're working on it behind the scenes, and you know, I've gotten so many emails from you guys asking about when it's going to be launching. But I have to say, it's in the works, and we're not sure when it's going to be launching. But what we'll do is we'll put a link at extremehealthradio.com/494 to it, and you may be listening 2 years in the future, and by that time, it will already have been launched. But right now, we're still working behind the scenes. We're not sure when it's going to launch, but it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a paid membership site, and we're going to go deep into some protocols and ways for you to get answers to your health questions, and it's going to be awesome. There's going to be a community in there where we can share ideas and make friends and share what's working, what's not, with all kinds of different health conditions. So if that sounds good to you, you can check that out. So that's about it. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. Your support on Amazon has been huge, so thank you. I cannot thank you enough. If you're looking for a way to support the show, that's probably the best way to do it, because if you make regular purchases on Amazon, and if you click our link, or if you bookmark our link, and then go through your bookmark every time you make a purchase, you don't have to buy anything health-related. It could be anything. You know, it could be appliances or anything. But when you shop through our Amazon link, you help support the show, and so many of you guys have been doing this month, and you know, December of 2016. And I'm just so grateful for that. It's just so cool. You guys are so awesome. I'm humbled, and I thank you so much for your support. And you know, because I know a lot of people just forget, and I forget too. But anytime I go into Amazon, I always try to my best to remember. I can support somebody, you know, this way. I can support their work, so I can go click through someone else's link and give them credit for my order. And it's a great way to support the show. And you guys are just so kind, and you know, it's so great that you remember too. I was really appreciative of that. But a lot of people also want to donate on a monthly basis, and there's two cool ways to do that. One is through PayPal. A lot of people donate, you know, $5, $10 a month, even $1 a month. We have a lot of people donating $2.50 a month, and it just comes out of your account once a month, and it's just an awesome way to support the show, and we thank you for that. You know, it takes a lot of work. There's thousands of hours go into the work of creating all these shows and scheduling guests and editing shows and doing YouTube videos and commenting and emailing, reaching out to guests and all this stuff. It takes a lot of work. And so we thank you. But we feel called to do it. You know, it's feel like this is part of our contribution to the planet to help people wake up and give them motivation that they can become healthier. And it's our mission to help millions and millions and millions of people around the world become healthier. So a lot of people are donating a little bit each month. Patreon is a great way to do that as well. That comes out of your account once a month. We currently do shows like 12 shows a month. And so if you donate like 50 cents a show, that would be $6 a month. Or if you donate 25 cents a show, that would be $3 a month. Or some people donate like $15 a show. It's crazy. So we thank you guys for that. That really, really helps us a lot. And yeah, I just can't thank you enough. Every time, you know, we get a notification that someone donates, we're just, you know, I thank God for that. And I'm so appreciative of that. And so what a blessing. So yeah, so you guys are awesome for that. And for, also through buying through our store, we appreciate that. If you're going to buy any health related tool or gadget or appliance or item or anything like that, check out our store. We're adding products, on a continuous basis. And we have lots of really, really unique things like the biomat, the Qigong course, the rebounder. We got the sauna. We've got blenders, juicers, all kinds of cool stuff. And I just recently put an ozone generator on there. Really high quality stuff, water filters, all kinds of awesome things. So check out our store. The next time you're going to make a purchase online, see if we have it. If we don't, let us know. And if it's something that we have tried, or, you know, we'll look into it. And if we think it's high quality enough and we buy it and use it and think it's good, we'll put it on our store too. So that's great. All right, guys, we appreciate you. You guys are awesome. Thank you. We really appreciate it. I hope you're having a great Christmas season, and we love you. And let us know if we can ever help, and we'll catch you guys on the next show.
No material on this blog is intended to suggest that you should not seek professional medical care. Always work with qualified medical professionals, even if you educate yourself in the field of live food, nutrition, and alternative medicine. I'm not a doctor, nor am I offering readers medical advice of any kind. None of the information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent any disease or condition. While information in this blog is discussed in the context of numerous conditions, it can be dangerous to take action based on any information in this blog or to start any health program without first consulting a health professional. The content found here is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as a treatment/cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be continued as such. Always work with a qualified healthcare professional before making any changes to your diet, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. This information is provided as is, and the reader/viewer assumes all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.